I'm not too bad, Alex. How are you doing?
I'm all right, Mr. Larratt. I've got to start off with an apology. We were supposed to be doing this podcast, I don't know if it was a week or 2 weeks ago, but things have just got a bit hectic, so hence the reason we're just catching up now.
Yeah, what you been up to then?
Well, as you know, well, you were with us. We did the Walsall show on the 9th of April at the Village Hotel with Keris, KRS, and Norricum Gold, NMG.
Yes.
We had Shard Capital there, the stockbrokers. They were the sponsors, and ourselves and Andrew Neil. That was our first little show. So, did you enjoy that show, by the way, may I add?
I absolutely enjoyed meeting the CEOs of the companies and the presentations they did, and the Q&A sessions after were really enlightening. And off the back of that, they've obviously released two RNSs within the last sort of couple of weeks. One was a placing, which is not a bad thing at all. When it comes to KRS, if you have a look sort of through the introduction packs and the information that we gave out on the night, they were looking towards next year to bring online basically their, jewel in the crown, if you like, the sort of mid-term news flow.
Oh,
And
the
Prince of Wales Online.
yeah.
Basically, they were going to do that in year two. Obviously, Dave Reeves on the way over, he stopped off into Togo,
Yeah.
where they've obviously got a mine. They're just waiting on the licenses. That doesn't look like it's going to be started until next year. So all he's gone and done, practically speaking, is raise some money to be able to get into the Prince of Wales mine, and basically bought that, a year ahead of roughly where it was going to be delivered. So, and that's going to be an amazing it's going to be an amazing mining exploration, and they know obviously what's down there because it was a previously producing well. So, and they're looking to get around about $1 million worth of gold out per month from that well.
So it's got a long way to go, man, Steve, because just to not interrupting you there, we were there on the 9th at the Village Hotel. Obviously, you could see he was excited about the Prince of Wales mine. It's flooded, and obviously they've got a bit of work to do. But then the placing came out on the 15th of April. I think it was about 1.25 million they raised. But it was the RNS, the way it was wrote, it was like a Carlsberg RNS. It was totally, it broke down everything for shareholders. And it was a really good RNS, in my opinion.
That's it. It was clear, it was concise, and from that you could see, obviously reading between the lines, when we were at the meeting, you could see that he was sort of sat there, referenced the Togo mine, thinking, right, that's going to be next year. Timescales wise, they've got a 5-year sort of permit on the Prince of Wales mine, and at £1 million per month. Obviously, the initial plan was to use the gold tribute mines to self-fund that Prince of Wales mine.
Yeah.
But all he's done is probably sat there and said, right, I've got 6 months here where I can get the Prince of Wales mine up and working. They've obviously had rough quotes and estimates, and they're obviously going to get that mine up and going. Several, as I said, that was part of the plan for year two. So they're going to get it up and going several months earlier. So, in return for that sort of 1.25 million,
Yeah.
they're going to be accessing 5 or 6 months additional cash flow from the gold that's being produced there. So to me, it's basically, tell you what, give me $1 million, I'll turn it into $5 million for you. It's very, very prudent of him. And it just shows that he's using his time flow as well. if you'd stuck with the original plan, and then you had to deal with Prince of Wales Mine as well as the Todo Mine, which looks to be sort of getting the permits in place for next year, give or take.
No control. He's got no control. It's basically politics, you know. So it's so long as a piece of string from there, you know.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, it's going to come online. It's a case of when. His wordings from the show were they were worried that they basically walked away from that mine and then, you know, rapidly started up these gold tributes, and they know they've got other assets ready to go. Obviously, that being the, you know, part of the second RNS that was released, they're going to be getting the Lindsay deposits up and going.
Cash
They've
positive.
had two.
Cash positive very soon, you're right, yeah.
Yes, that, well, practically speaking, they've already had the first truck load delivered, and that's been processed, so they're practically sort of ballpark away in that first check to hit the bank. The second truckload's gone off, and basically the amount of weight that the trucks can take, if you divide that by the amount of gold per ounce that they were, sorry, the amount of gold per ton that they were expecting, they're going to be ballpark right in the middle of their estimates. But, and again, the wording on the RNS was brilliant. You could tell that the workforce is now up to speed. They know what they're doing. They've got a nice system in place. So, you know, everything's absolutely brilliant there. So, you
It's gonna.
know, they're going to go within the next few months from one producing mine, they're going to go to three by the looks of it. And, you know, absolutely brilliant that they're hyper accelerating the gold. And then that will practically self-fund the start-up on the manganese mine. So, you know, brilliant sort of team there, and obviously the way that they're running the business is absolutely brilliant. So,
There's still got a way to go, like, because the Prince of Wales, as we know, it's flooded, so it's going to
yeah.
take a good few months. But the one thing I would add is with the placing shares, when they did the placing, obviously we expect a rise once the new shares are placed onto the market. So obviously, I think once they come out and they get soaked up, it could be a very interesting share, KRS, for sure, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, practically speaking, two ways to look at the share price. It was up sort of 1.7, give or take.
I can see that.
Yeah, KRS. The placing was offered at 1.1. So,
Yeah.
practically speaking, from that 1.7 level, if you imagine we're now in production, which we wasn't back then. And we're now, you know, we've got a lot more cash in the bank. We've got a lot more assets that we're starting to produce from. So for the share price to be back down at 1.1, it's,
Right,
you
yeah.
know, it's a very, very fair price to sort of be looking at. So I mean,
Yeah, no problem. I know what you mean.
From where we were to what where we are now, the shares come to fruition on Friday, so I would expect to be seeing, you know, the share price go back up to that point because it's being sort of held artificially at these levels. So, you know, that was the first one there that
So,
we've.
right, what about ADAD? What's the take on that one? ADAD Energy.
Well, basically, they did a placing as well.
I watched that one, yeah. Oversubscribed
But
as well.
it wasn't a placing as such, it was a cash raise.
Yeah.
Practically speaking, they've got more than enough money that they need to be able to do everything with. So they've got the cash there for the 2D seismics. They've got more than enough cash there to purchase the land that they won the bids on last November. Historically, the payments are due sort of round about June. Now, they've got more than enough cash there And obviously, as everyone knows, that's sort of involved with 880 and, potentially the wider community. They've now got the oil in place. So it could now be a case of get the 2D seismic work out the way, identify where there's potential traps, and then there could be additional land bids going in sort of this year for the additional sort of areas. So one thing I'm getting a lot of is a lot of people saying we don't want to joint venture for Iceline 2. Now, I've said to a lot of people, and there's a
Might
bit of
not get the choice, by
disagreement.
the way. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, practically speaking, with the Iceline 2, they might not get permission to have it as a flowing well. So it might not be a production license, it might just be a testing license. So there might be limitations as to what they can actually do with it.
Yeah.
By the looks of it, they're going to be producing it on the same ice pad as Iceline 1 was drilled. So, people are sat there saying, we want to go it alone. We don't necessarily want to go it alone. What we would like is someone to come in, for instance, 50-50, and gain the knowledge, gain the data. Now, someone like Otto and Great Bear, they've got a lot of seismic work on our area, and we've got some seismic work on their area
Steve,
that they haven't got.
why haven't they gone with 3D? Why are they using 2D? There's the question I would like to know.
Well, I mean, if I can do it, Paul Brzezinski's done it. There's so much information and knowledge out there. They now know the shale's in place. If you know the topography of the land, the
Yeah.
geology of the land, you can see what's what and where. Now, the drill data that they've got, they've identified three playing sequences within the Brookian sand, which are about 4,000 feet in depth. Now, they know that if they find the traps, any migrating oil through those sequences will be oil bearing.
So the one uses,
And
so the what I'm trying to say is, rather than use 3D and be more specific, they've gone with 2D, which you know yourself has a lot of gaps in it.
yeah, again, because the geology's now been proven, the area's been de-risked,
Yeah.
they will be able to identify the traps within the 2D.
All right.
And obviously with fracking the HRZ, because it's sort of uniform across our existing acreage, they don't need to utilize the expense of the 3D seismics.
All right, yeah.
So, why spend money on something when as has been proven, there's oil in the ground. So Icewine 2's basically gonna test the fracking solutions that they want to try out and the different sort of distances between the sections that they frack, just to get the best fracking solution and the best distance on the drill bit, and then they can work out cost per barrel out of the ground, and then they've got a working model. They can then put a true value on what they've got and search for joint venture partners from there. So,
Have they used the word commercial yet in an RNS?
no, they haven't, but with the oil in play and the sort of 20 times better permeability, you can ascertain, they wouldn't be drilling unless they thought it was going to be commercial.
Yeah.
And one of the main things is the porosity and the permeability of the shale. Now, if it's come back 20 times better than they've expected, then
Another
that
question for
sort of
you there,
says it
Chris.
all.
That's another question. It's 20 times better. When I read the original RNS, that obviously I'm not, just because I want to understand it. They actually give no figure. I didn't understand it when they said 20 times better, but I couldn't actually pin down a figure to work off, to be honest.
No, again, they haven't released the sort of official data.
All right. All right.
Paul Brzezinski and Dave Hall attended a evening up in London, And, you know, Paul Brzezinski's basically said that they're going to be putting out a better defined sort of statement in reference to what they've got, as in the results, just to fill in those little gaps.
Yeah, the link.
So,
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
you know, I've gone off, I've done my research, as everyone knows. I've come back with a figure, and they measure it in something called Darcy units. And the scales I've been using are between sort of 68 and 72 Darcy units. Now, if they've come back 20 times better than expected, I don't know what unit they had in place for the, you know, the flow rate of the oil, basically, that's
Calculation,
what they're talking about.
yeah.
You know, they've said it's going to flow like conventional. I've been saying that for months. So if it comes in round about that sort of area, then you're talking sort of mid $30 per barrel out of ground extraction cost as a ballpark figure. So if it's 20 times better than expected, let's say they're expecting 10 Darcy units, if it comes in at 200, then you've got a better flow rate than a conventional well. So I don't know what the figures were they were expecting.
Yeah,
It'll be
no, sure.
interesting to find out, and I hope they put it down in that information.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting story, but like you know yourself, it's got a long way to run. And then obviously the way what's happening now to the markets now, sentiment will change. Well, the true investors, they'll probably invest on the dips, but you'll get other investors. They'll look around in the market elsewhere while they wait for the news to come, really.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, with 880, now they're cash rich. You can tell that they've got the oil in the ground. You know it's going to be commercial based upon the RNSs and the data that they've put out. They wouldn't be obviously going to do any sort of flow tests or rates unless they knew it was going to be a commercially viable product. And again, based on the Otto and Great Bear well, they've said that all of their productions were, you know, cost effective at the oil price that was obviously back in the end of December. So that was when the oil price was approaching sort of $30 per barrel. So, you know, on the price of oil per barrel. So we could effectively be looking at, you know, $10 per barrel profit at today's price of oil rates. So if you're talking 50-50 joint venture partner, that's $5 per barrel, circa 5 billion barrels, sorry, 3 billion barrels at the sort of $5 profit. I'll let everyone do the maths. That's a lot of profit, you know, even if you say a 10%
Yeah.
joint venture deal, you know, let someone else do it, sit back, relax. You know, if you're talking that sort of figure, you're still talking 1.5 billion market cap for sitting back and twiddling your thumbs. But there's obviously still conventional to find. There's still obviously additional land purchases we can make. So, you know, the sky's the limit, and the share price, you know, yes, it's come back down from sort of the 4p region.
Yeah.
People have been saying, like, it's obviously been overbought, but if you know where the company's going, anyone that's bought in at any level, even going back to the old days when it was formerly Tangiers Petroleum, you know, people that are going to go and look at their shares in a few years' time, and they're going to be in profit too. So
Well,
there's not.
it's a market, as you know, Stephen. Obviously, I'm not in a position to give out financial advice, but to be honest, if you're on the AIM market and you're sitting on profits, good grief, you know. It's people fall in love with shares and they seem to just stick with them and go. I'm not saying ADE Energy is that type of share, but when there's profit on the table on the AIM market, it's so volatile.
Well,
You know what I'm trying to say, don't you?
yeah, thing is, a lot of people with 880, they know the bigger picture, they know the story. They've got solid people in Dave Wall. You've got an industry leader that understands the information and the technologies in play through Paul Rudzinski. And, you know, if you follow a decent CEO and decent people on the team, you know full well that the company will practically look after itself as long as the product's in the ground. The product's in the ground now. There are people jumping in at 0.7p. The share price has gone up to sort of 3-4p. They've sliced their original investments out with profits, and they're still going to hold the shares. They're thinking long term, you know, same as I've always been. Long term, the share price can, you know, potentially fly because there's an economically viable product there to obviously tap into. So with the, you know, going back to the original sort of thing, with the cash raise they've done, they can now sit there, and by the time of the joint venture partner, they can literally sit there, do a one drill program for Icewine to share the information and the data to, you know, there potentially could be several companies that want to come on board long term, and they want to share in the funding of Icewine too, just so that they've got access to the data and they don't have to pay for it themselves.
Yep,
So
of course, I agree totally. I do, but can I just touch on something else here? Sorry, not being rude. Just Metal Tiger, MTR. I was watching a few commentators on social media last week, which I thought was quite funny, really. Somebody was saying, "Oh yeah, you're going to get it 50% lower. It'll go to 2.5," and then somebody else said there was a placing coming, but I know a little bit about MTR, and I watched the RNS today, the financial update, and they raised 1 million. But the interesting thing about this, it wasn't a placing share. It was shares, each share that was purchased, and it was like a closed raise of 4.5p. You got one warrant at 9p with a 12-month period. So what that tells me is Metal Tiger have not gone to the markets. It's not been open to investors. They basically aim this at high net worth individuals to buy this. So I just don't understand
That's it.
what's happening that's going on around the markets, to be honest.
Thing is, it's the same as always with placings. A lot of people sit there and go, "Oh no, a placing's coming."
Yeah, this was the
Placings are
financial update,
good.
though, you know what I mean?
Yeah, placings are good as long as they're in conjunction with the ability to show that they're going to be utilizing that money to do more than keeping the lights on. KRS, but you know, their $1 million is going to turn into $5 to $6 million with a known product in the ground. Metal Tiger, obviously, with the warrants, obviously a lot higher price there. That means that anyone that's buying in has got to have done their research. They've got to have done, you know, everything to do their due diligence. And again, because it hasn't been offered on the sort of the open market, if you like, as in they haven't announced, "Hey, we're going to do some sort of placing here. If you want some, ring your broker." They've literally kept it, you know, as you said, to the high net worth clients, to the sophisticated investors. They're able to obviously see Metal Tiger, what they're doing, what the assets are, what the expected news flow is. You know, you don't do that sort of placing unless you know long term that putting your money with that company after it's done what it's done. You know, I mean, let's be 100% honest here. Their share price has gone up, what, 400-500%. So,
Well, I remember
you
Paul
know.
Johnson, by the way. I remember I was interviewing Paul Johnson, and the share price was at a penny, and he took the warrants at 1.7, and I asked him why he did that, and that was maybe what, 2 months ago. So it's just
Yeah.
it's an amazing journey at the moment. It's definitely in a kind of I was at last week. I was at a show last week. Can't remember where I was now. For Mind Maven, I was down in London
Yes.
last week, and Mod were there, basically Mod Resources Limited, so they attended. And then you had Metal Tiger on the same evening, And I must admit, I watched they're listed on the Australian market, sorry. Metal Tiger have 30% joint venture in Botswana, and own 5% of that company. And it was a very, very interesting story, to say the least, last Wednesday. I was very impressed with them, Mod Resources Limited, definitely.
I was going to say, I mean, I had a look obviously originally at Metal Tiger. They've got so much going on, so many different areas, so many different joint ventures. It's got, loads of arms and legs.
Oh, Dad,
So,
unbelievable.
going back to my previous statement, unless you've done some research on the company, all of the additional sort of companies as well that Metal Tiger's involved in, you just wouldn't have a clue. You wouldn't be able to guess what the company was doing, where they were going. So, unless you know the background of all of the different CEOs, it's one of those shares where, they've got a lot of assets, a lot more still to come, a lot more news flow. And again, they've practically only just started the journey on that company.
Yeah,
So, it looks very exciting. And the CEO in place obviously taking options well above the share price. That just shows you the sort of people that are running the business. You find good CEOs, you find a good business model, you find decent assets in place, and just doing that bit of due diligence, have a look at the CEOs, have they got a proven track record? If not, have they got the people on board to help them along the journey?
yeah,
So.
they've got what a lot of people don't realize as well with Metal Tiger is, especially with Paul Johnson, he's quite a shrewd investor. So what if you actually look into that company and you look at the warrants that are held within Metal Tiger from other companies, that's another thing that's adding the value. But just to talk about Paul Johnson, I've got to pick up on this one. When I was at the show last Wednesday, I interviewed Paul Johnson and Andrew Bell. So, because I wanted to know, when I was in London the week before, actually, I actually caught up with a pair of them, to say the least. But I spoke to them last week. And I've got to mention GGP, Gretlin Gold.
Gretlin Gold, yeah.
You know them? Well, they've gone up around 75% since we started covering them. But the interesting thing about that is, if you look at the board, is actually who's on the board of Gretlin Gold. And one of the guys, he's a non-executive director, is Alex Borelli. So you've got that connection there from Metal Tiger. And then you've got Paul Johnson, who's a non-executive on the board there. And obviously you've got Andrew Bell, a non-executive chairman. And I put the interview
Yep.
out on the Twitter site, and it's a really interesting story, that one. Like I say, we're following it. And I was talking to both the guys on Saturday at the Masters Investor Show. So that's definitely something people, just put on your watch list and just keep watching it. It's a story that's going to unfold, to say the least.
So there's obviously potential news flow there between obviously Paul Johnson and potentially that company.
Mr. Bell as well, yeah. So anyway, on a different subject, what are you watching now? What are you doing at the moment, apart from the 8080?
Well, I mentioned it in my previous days on the LSE board about something called gas fracking technology. And I said, obviously, by the time 880 gets to the point of production, they can use gas to frack. And there's a company that I sort of put what I would call pump money in. So it's not a proven technology, but what they have done is exceptional work. Now the company CEO is a guy called Robert Price, and I'm sure you know what company I'm on about.
It's not HNR, is it?
Yes, it is. It's called Highlands Natural Resources.
We're interviewing them this
Now,
week, by the way, Steve.
yeah, I was going to say
We, yeah.
one of your other people are doing the
Yeah, I'm going to interview them tonight.
An interview with them, but I'll just give the brief
Yeah, of
view
course.
basically. Now, practically speaking, the easiest way to describe the technology is a tree. When you frack from basically the base of the tree out to the tips. Now, a fluid, the molecules are quite large to carry the particles in that you need to frack. So they'll only go so far. Now, what they're doing with this technology in this company, the gas effectively goes out along those branches, but can go all the way to like the leaf tip. So they can get around about sort of 20 to 30% better extraction rates from oil wells. Now, this doesn't necessarily have to stick within sort of shale plays. It can be utilized for conventional plays as well if they're in sort of tight rocks. So all they do is put gas down, frack using the gas, and let the oil flow come out. Now, they've done a deal with a company called Schlumberger or Schlumberger.
Schlumberger.
Yeah, it depends how you want to pronounce it.
We should take that offshore, Schlumberger.
Yeah, again, an absolute massive company, and they've practically announced the cooperation agreement with them, and they announced yesterday that they're going to go out and do sort of five different sort of shale plays of different types. So again, obviously I've done a lot of research on shale plays, so they're going to go for some tight shale plays, some easily flowing shale plays. They've got a clay heavy one, a clay light one, tight rock, loose rock. So they, you know, they're doing a lot of work there.
Yeah.
And what they're looking towards doing, if they don't obviously get bought out, they've got a patent pending on the technology, which is called DT Ultravert. And that patent is obviously pending, so it could drop at any point in time, or it could happen in a few years. But practically speaking, what we're looking at doing is just taking a percentage of the additional oil flow that comes from the wells that they will obviously refrack. So, and you're talking a, you know, $50 billion industry. And if they can obviously sublease or let this product under patent be leased out to Schlumberger, then, you know, if they take even a minute cut of what comes out of the ground, it could be an absolute game-changing company.
Yeah,
so, brilliant. But again, they still have got quite a way to go. But the company is obviously in with one of the industry big boys. So, you know, and that's what they've got going there. But that's sort of only 80% of the business model. The other side of it is looking to, you know, small plays where they can get their own oil and or mine or extract, you know, products out of the ground. So, for instance, they were looking at old drill data sets in Utah, and there was a company there called Tikkaboo Minerals.
That's a good name.
So when they started looking at the data sets, they actually noticed spikes on the drill data there, and it actually shows that they found uranium. So this was back in March that this happened. They then doubled their acreage a few weeks later at a very low cost. So, you know, that's something that they're looking to develop. So, and they've, in North Dakota last November, they acquired licenses that covered 1,900 acres, and they only paid, get this, if you think 880 at sort of $50 per acre is a good price, they picked up their acreage on mainland USA, and they only paid $10 an acre.
Good grief.
And that's the sort of, yeah,
oh, man.
That's it. You know, ounces an acre of land in this country, you know, a couple of £1,000, they've picked it up for a fiver an acre. And obviously they're expecting to be able to extract product with that. So again, very shrewd business model. They've got working capital. the CEOs of the company, again, have put a lot of their own money in. So, there's a few loose ends in the company that need tidying up going forward, but, it's an exciting company looking at it from the outside in.
I must admit, I've seen the RNS, and you couldn't help, you couldn't miss the RNS. You know what I mean? It was an amazing RNS, it was, to say the least. Like I said,
Yeah, that's
we're
it.
trying to get hold of them. You know what I mean? So we were supposed to get hold of them today, but for obvious reasons, you can imagine why. They're telling that we're very popular people. So, but we will get them this week, no problem. Highland Resources. But just remind, sorry, I've just stayed just to go back on that. You've just reminded me there actually. That Gretlin Gold, GGP, they're doing the same thing. What they're doing is, but the difference is they're taking no salary. Paul Johnson, Andrew Bell, they're just taking shares and issue. So that's the reason what's attracted me to it, because nobody's been paid no salaries, extortionate salaries, like we see across there with a
Yeah,
lot of
that's it.
companies. Yeah.
Yeah, if they want additional money from the company, they've got to work, and get shareholder value as well as value for themselves. So,
Yeah, it's a good. I like that.
that's the shrewd business model, really, isn't it?
That is for investors, and like you said, the same as Keris, their KRS, them guys are putting the money in. So, just to swing the pendulum to the other end of the scale, I've been following the NYO ticker story, Nyota Minerals, since last year, mid
Yes.
last year. I followed them since spot five. I think they're over a penny now. But I was absolutely stunned, and I've got to say this, I was stunned at the RNS that came out on the 22nd of April, where the board are actually blaming shareholders for the lack of assets coming on board to the company. So they're blaming the shareholders for the shareholder action against the board for the last 1, 2 years, and now the board are trying to blame the shareholders. It's an amazing story, that one. It's amazing.
Well, how long does it take to get an asset on board?
Exactly, and they're getting paid as well handsomely, may I add. So, you know what I mean? It's just.
Yeah, and if they look at other companies and other business models in that sector, NMG, KRS, NTR, if you look at those business models, why are they taking a salary when they're not practically doing anything for their shareholders? Unfortunately, a lot of CEOs forget who actually, keep the business in.
Keeps the lights on, basically. The
Yeah.
lights on and all that, But it's a story.
Yeah.
It's a story I'm following, and it's the shareholder action now, and it'll be very interesting if they can get to the 51% mark. But there, right. So the companies I was down in London last week, as I said, but the week before I was with European Metals, EMH. They're into where.
Yeah.
By the way, I completely took my eye off this one with Keith. They do lithium, and that's going to be, in my opinion, a big, big thing with the electric car industry. And they were a 5p in February, and I went back to interviewing there 2 weeks ago, and they were up by 200%. So I missed that one. I did Coin Consilium, a Bitcoin company, fintech, with Eddie, really interesting company. And is it Finnish Mining? FAM. I've interviewed them, and they're in Greenland. They look a really, really interesting company for the next 6 months. For the news flow, they do look interesting. But jump forward, the Masters. You never went down, Steve, for the weekend. What's your excuse?
I'm sorry, I had other commitments,
I'm only
unfortunately,
joking.
that I had to attend to, so
I'm kidding.
yeah.
You missed a good show, by
But
the way. You missed, honestly, you missed. Jim Mellon on the main stage. He was totally, he was on form, Jim Mellon. And I had the pleasure to interview a few companies. Dave Lenigas, I got him on the main stage, and then we did a little interview. That was quite fun. So definitely a lot of good
yeah.
companies there as well. It was a good day. The London South East boys, I met them, Scott and Phil, the two directors. They had an excellent stand at the Masters, them guys, London South East.
Yeah.
But I've got to add, and I won't add any more to this, two companies refused to be interviewed or go on camera. They didn't want me to take any pictures of them in front of their stands, which I find a bit bizarre and strange. But there you go. That's my opinion.
Unfortunately, I think we're seeing a sort of shift in the market, if you like, with social media now being out there. And, you know, there's a lot of intelligent people investing in companies. You know, for instance, me with my knowledge of fracking companies, etc.
Yeah, true.
I'm able to depict and read between the lines on the RNSs, if they've got a Twitter account, what information are they putting out. What companies used to do is just put something in paper, sending off to, you know, the subsequent brokers, and just put a prospectus up on the website as per the AIM sort of listing rules.
Yeah.
But now there's a lot of people that are making a living off dealing with companies like this. So in the grand scheme of things, CEOs, you know, and this is, I can call it a warning, you know, I'm a PI, I've got no qualms in saying that. With any CEO now, they've got to be on the ball, they've got to be answerable to their shareholders, because all you need is one little blot on your CV, and the wonderful world now, obviously there's chat rooms galore all over, you know, you've got LSE boards there to chat on, you've got Twitter, you've got ADVFN,
WhatsApp,
you've got Blue Share,
yeah.
You've got Hot Copper. Now, a lot of people post on multiple boards. One bit of bad news, one bit of bad press, all of a sudden, your name is all over the world on all of these different bulletin boards, and it has shocked me, you know, when I put a bit of information or data out there,
yeah.
Within 20 minutes, I've got someone on the phone to me from Australia saying, hey, I've just obviously found your, you know, this bit of information. Can you just explain this to me? Now, for a CEO of the company, they've got obviously a lot more following over a lot more boards, and they should be answerable to the shareholders. So, and that's the sort of shift we're seeing now in the market. Companies have got to have good PR, they've got to be on the ball, they've got to release news as and when it's expected. Otherwise, the market makers pick up on it and will punish the shareholders, and in turn, the shareholders will then punish the CEOs for putting sort of wrongful or incorrect or inaccurate sort of information out there, you know, and obviously that's what we're seeing with that, you know, previously mentioned company. But why would you, you know, key question, why would you want to go to an investor's show, pay money to stand there on a stand, and then not want to be photographed or answer questions or anything along those lines, you know?
Bizarre, isn't it?
Are they just sat there living the dream, you know, utilising as sort of PI's money to fund their own sort of self-gratification? Oh, look at me, I'm a CEO of a company.
The only thing I would say was one of the companies had an RNS out last Friday, and the only thing I wanted to find out from that CEO, I just wanted him to comment on the RNS that was released to the markets on the Friday, which obviously was in the public domain. So that was the issue with that one company. And then the other company, he basically just didn't want to talk at all. So, but I've got to mention just other companies. I was speaking to like Solo Oil, Fergus Jenkins, absolute gentleman. James Parson from Sound Energy, absolutely fantastic guy. By the way, what a really, he's a good guy, like he is. And then I was Stephen Standerson from UCOG. He couldn't help us enough, you know. And I even spoke to Sirius Petroleum and I asked them a few questions, because that story's gone on a long time, Graham Lyon. So, but he had the decency to talk to me about the RNS to put out, the renewal date coming up for them. And probably the best bloke of the day for me, apart from Jim Mellon, because it was his show, was Nick Moose Banford from Tip TV. They were in the VIP lounge, was interviewing everybody, and they were absolutely fantastic. Nick and the boys from Tip TV. Great.
Yeah.
He had all his Crystal Palace colours on me, I had. I let the secret out. because they were at Wembley. Honestly, you should have seen him, man. He was class. They were at Wembley on the Sunday playing Watford, and they won as well. But
Yeah.
it's absolutely brilliant. But a fantastic day. But Steve.
But that's what you want from the CEOs, though, isn't it? Down-to-earth people. One minute they're watching a football match, next minute, they're sat there talking to the people who fund their fundraisings so that the business can operate, and that's the thing, and that's what I like about these investor shows now, where PIs are able to go there, get information, pass the information around the bulletin boards,
Exactly, yeah.
potentially read between the lines on the companies, you can send them an email, but you don't actually get a feel for the person, Take someone like Dave Reeves, he's happy to hold your hand, shake your hand, and have a drink with you, and you just don't get that with any other CEOs,
Yeah, there's some good ones out there,
so.
by the way. There's some
Oh yeah,
good guys out there, I think.
there's a lot of good ones out there, but as I said, sort of warning shot to a lot of CEOs out there. There's now chat rooms, forums, etc., happening all over the world, and there are multiple posters on multiple bulletin boards. So if someone wants to get a petition together and everyone's feeling the same, because it's their money at the end of the day,
Yeah, true, yeah.
then they're going to be liable to a revolt, if you like. So
It's a lot of people don't realize the more talk goes on in the background when you're in these WhatsApp groups and you're in direct message groups on Twitter. This is what I've been telling companies when I've been chatting away to them. It's not the front page of a bulletin board. People now are going behind the scenes in social media and talking. And that's where a lot of talking is being done. So you can't be censored there, and people can actually post what they want and talk about what they want. So
yeah, definitely.
it's
And when it comes to money, one little mistake by the company, by the CEO, and he's answerable then to the PIs. If the PIs don't get the response they want, then would you want that person sort of in charge of your hard-earned money if they're not delivering the promises that they're saying that they will do?
I know.
And calls into question their integrity, their honesty, And that's what you need as a CEO of a company.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
So lovely
yeah.
talking, by the way, my lads. We've been on quite a while, but it's absolute pleasure talking to you, Steve. And I just thought today we'd mix it up a bit, and just see, we'll just have a little cross talk across the board, and that's what we would do.
I have a catch up at long last. You must be
I
bored of sitting on trains going. One minute you're down south, next minute you're up north.
know, 300 mile one way. I went last week. I went the Wednesday, stayed overnight the Wednesday, got the train home on the Thursday, got up Friday morning, jumped back on a train at 8:08. Absolutely bizarre. But it's what you're gonna do for the website, isn't it, really? That's what you're gonna do it now. So such is
That's
life.
it. We put our names out there, so we've got to make ourselves available.
So, by the way, thanks very much, and it's absolutely a pleasure to on LSE Share Talk. Steve Larratt. All right, mate?
Have a good evening, Alex, and I'll catch you later. Cheers.
Thank you.